In this week's programme, we look at the work of one of Ireland's most distinguished geographers, Tom Jones Hughes, former professor of geography at UCD, and the man who founded the department there in 1950. He was born in Wales and educated at the University of Aberystwyth. Jones Hughes's essays have been published by Geography Publications, with an introduction by a former doctoral student of his, William Smith, emeritus professor of geography at UCC. The volume is published by William Nolan, who was also a doctoral student of Jones Hughes. The title of the publication is Landholding, Society and Settlement in 19th Century Ireland, a Historical Geographer's Perspective, and is an invaluable guide to anyone in search of an understanding of Ireland's past. For example, the following caught my eye in an essay from 1979 on Irish landscape studies. Tom Jones Hughes writes, "The impact of man on land in Ireland was modest. We search in vain, for example, for any extensive traces of the 8 million people who occupied Ireland in the 19th century, the bulk of whom were rural dwellers." Willie Smith and Willie Nolan are both with me. You're welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Willie Smith, when Tom Jones Hughes came to UCD in 1950 to set up a geography department, he found the going tough. I mean, you're right that he actually felt like giving up, did he?
Well, yeah, it was difficult. He was a young geographer. He was coming from a very different background. I think it's terribly important to emphasise that Tom was Welsh, nonconformist. People mightn't appreciate how recent geography is as a discipline in Ireland. Mm. And Jones Hughes was coming in 1950. He was the first geographer in UCD. We were lucky as his students that he came from a very distinctive department, geography and anthropology in Aberystwyth. And so he came as much more a human geographer. Sometimes people think geography, you know, grows out of rocks and whatever. But the kind of geography that Jones Hughes was bringing was out of the French tradition, the Vidalian. Vidal de la Blache was the great geographer in France. He was to say once about places that places are like medals stamped in the likeness of their people. The problem from Ireland, and of course Jones Hughes was to engage in this most creatively, was that Ireland had a number of medals or codes stamped on a landscape, which meant that it was highly contested, conflicted. Anyway, Tom was to bring these kinds of points of views to us. There was such a fresh perspective. We were mainly country people. We had made so many assumptions about our culture. I mean, one would say that, you know, the most crucial aspects of culture are the things that are hidden, the things that are assumed, the things that we've internalized so much we don't question. Jones Hughes came and he questioned everything. And as Willie would agree, when he got to discuss things with you as a post-grad undergrad, he continuously probed about every aspect of Irish life. He never left you a lazy assumption about anything. Mm. And he was to bring the same fresh perspective on Irish landscapes and societies. It was that kind of freshness.
Willie Nolan, how did you respond to him? Did you see him more or less in the same light?
Yeah, I think so. He did bring that kind of quality that he was very curious about Ireland. And I remember him saying one time that his whole ambition in Ireland was to get to know the country. And I think this book of essays kind of shows that he did kind of adequately get to know Ireland better than most of its people in many respects. And I think, as Willie has said also, that what we got from him was he drove us ourselves on to actually get to know our own country and our own people. Now, he was very people-oriented, and I think when he came to Ireland, he found kind of congenial fellow kind of inquirers in, say, Kevin Danaher in the folklore department in UCD, Rory de Valera in the archaeology department. And through them, he kind of got an insight into Ireland. But I think also it was his ambition to travel nearly every part of Ireland and to integrate with the countryside. He perhaps wouldn't have been a great person. He wasn't a man that would go into a pub and talk to the people in the pubs and all of that. But he was a very acute observer. And in his writings, I think it's the landscape that comes across. And really what he was doing, he was looking at the material landscape, the buildings, the farm sizes, the fields, the patterns of the fields, the way they were laid out, and the way in which the land was worked. But particularly, I think it was the relationship between the owners of the land, whom we refer to always really as aliens in the countryside, and the people who were the tenant farmers of the land, and their whole material culture. I think this, he exposed this tremendously. Now, it's extraordinary when you think of Tom Jones Hughes that he wrote about 19th century Ireland, rarely mentioning Daniel O'Connell or Charles Stuart Parnell or Michael Davitt. But in a sense, he is, in some ways, it's the real history of Ireland that we get in Tom Jones Hughes's writings. It's the history of the people, the history of the ordinary people.
And yet, I mean, I picked up from your introduction, Willie Smith, that he was regarded as something as an outsider by the history department, by Robin Dudley Edwards. Who is,
yes.
Is that true? Yes.
Well, Hugh Carney, the very fine historian, Hugh was one of the few historians who very much appreciated Jones Hughes's originality and the kind of new points of views he was bringing. But the history department as a whole didn't really engage with him, and he remained, in a sense, an outsider to them. And Willie Nolan, pointing out that Jones Hughes's Ireland is not an Ireland of elites in the sense of, one could argue that Irish history, not now, but in the period Tom was working in, Tom Jones Hughes, was predominantly about political elites.
Sort of high politics.
Yeah, politics and political personalities. Mm. And to some extent, some of that lingers on. Jones Hughes was bringing a comparative geographical, sociological, anthropological perspective on Irish society. And as Willie has pointed out, the focus was very much on what happened on the ground, in parishes, on estates, in townlands. And I think one of the central motifs, which was not developed, and some historians would still not agree with it, is his introduction of the notion that Ireland was a colonial country, that colonialism was a central motif in interpretation, and that one of the great ways of understanding Ireland was to examine this extraordinary, for West European point of view, extraordinary encounter by an immigrant people, a conqueror, but innovative, creative, destructive, and how the prior inhabitants, how the existing societies responded to, mediated and negotiated that encounter. And Tom Jones Hughes explored in the landscape and in the documents, because I think it's terribly important to recognise that he was a phenomenal field observer, but he was a phenomenal worker on the 19th century documents. Now, in this book, in all those essays, he's profoundly building on things like Griffith's valuation. And we're just finishing an Atlas of the Great Famine, and I'm staggered by the weight of documentation for 19th century Ireland.
Yeah,
phenomenal.
The point here that Willie Smith has been making, that he saw a colonial lens as central in looking at it. He's been criticised for that, though, hasn't he? I mean,
he's been criticised, particularly by some of the northern geographers, for actually having what you would term a nationalist agenda.
Uh-huh.
But I think in the same way, S.N. Evans has been criticised, insofar as he saw a common culture throughout all of Ireland. Now, I don't think Tom Jones, who was articulating any kind of nationalist view, although it does come across strongly, if you read his work carefully, there is a sense that he's very much on the side of what he calls the Gael, as against the Saxon or the English throughout his essays in this book particularly. Not in pejorative terms, but in a sense of, he's looking at the landscape and he's seen the three elements which the landscape was constructed of, or which the colony was constructed of. He's seen land ownership particularly as the key kind of criterion in all of this. He looks at the language to some extent, but not as much as in terms in respect of the land. And he also looks at religion and the role of the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church. But really all of this is in terms of the field evidence and the evidence that we can see around us in the landscape.
Yeah.
And it's actually the relationship of these kind of elements to each other in the landscape, which he sees the whole colonial enterprise. Mm. And it's a very compelling argument, because you cannot look at the landscape of Ireland without seeing this kind of contest, as it were. And he sees.
But presumably, there's only a problem there, Willie, if that lens is reductive. If that's all you see, namely the colonial or anti-colonial lens, then. But that would not be his position, I take it.
No, yeah. No. I think one of the most interesting things is that Tom Jones-Hughes is recognizing that that's the situation, but what he's also asking is, how did Irish society, and in its different components, different regions, survive and nurture and, in a sense, become dominant in some areas? For example, I would have thought that one of the things, and Willie has mentioned this, is the attention he pays not just to the estate, which is the colonial motif, if you like, the attention he pays to strong farmers, to the tenant farmer, and the way they lived and worked in different parts, the tillage farmers of County Louth, the pastoral people.
When
of
you
Clare.
Say, by the way, a strong farmer, what kind of acreage are we talking about?
Well, it would depend on the region, but we're talking about anything plus 50 acres.
I see. I mean,
In fact, I do him an injustice because Tom would more prefer to say, what was the valuation of the farm? he would, in the same way with estates,
he
would map them in terms of their valuation rather than size. But he did see.
But under acreage, you'd be upwards of 50 acres.
Yeah,
that kind of range. Yes,
and
yeah.
He would see this kind of group wherever they were, sheep farmers in Galway, tillage farmers in Louth, mixed farming in Tipperary, or whichever. He saw them as carrying the Irish culture, what he called Irish. Now, his use of Gael I would have problems with.
Right.
But if we say Irish.
Well, what did he mean by Irish?
Yeah.
I'm asking you.
Yeah, because he uses the term Gael. And, of course, some of his most sturdy Irish people in his literature are descendants of Anglo-Normans in southeastern Ireland.
Yes, but Willie, if he said that the strong farmers carried the Irish culture, what did he mean? What were they carrying?
Well, the areas he's talking about is, A, in terms of agrarian resistance to the power of the landlord, the capacity to support, for example, the institutions of education and the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. I think one of the most radical, Tom was a radical geographer in the sense, John Andrews, the great Trinity geographer, said that English geographers writing in Ireland were rather conservative and rather English. We'd say even Freeman. But that Tom knew, given his Welsh experience, knew Ireland from the inside, and he was then to stress what were the radical elements in the Irish culture, which were to either moderate or resist the colonial overlay. And so he does give, and Willie points out, for example, that the tenant farmer, whatever, nurtured the Catholic Church and the institutions of the Catholic Church, the seminaries, that they nurtured education. And one of the things I've emphasized is that one of the extraordinary things about Ireland is that given the, and I think we have to call them colonial, quote, imperial conditions, schooling was privileged for the elite, and that the Irish culture itself had to generate its own schooling system. And it did it from a lay, it started off as a lay thing, a head schools or whatever. It didn't come out of the church. The church, in a sense, colonised the schools.
One of the most interesting things, Willie Nolan, in his work, he says, drawing attention to the fact that there were two parochial systems operating side by side in Ireland, and that the Anglican Church after the Reformation took over the old medieval system, whereas the revitalised Catholic Church in the 19th century built new buildings. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, he was very good on that, and it's something that perhaps Irish historians or Irish historical geographers haven't actually looked at as much, in a sense, the impact of the Reformation on the social and economic structure of Ireland. He's very interesting in terms of the attempts made in the early 19th century to, as it were, effect a kind of a reformation in Ireland. And this is the Anglican revival, as it were, and the building of an enormous number of new Anglican churches on ancient Christian sites. And he regards this, and he writes of it, the word terms he uses, it was a hollow gesture. And, of course, many of Jones Hughes's his writings, they're very prophetic because you can see today in the landscape some of the kind of assumptions he made have come true, as it were, because many of the Anglican churches he talked about, which was erected in this early period, are now deserted and very lonely places in the landscape. But what the point he was making about the Reformation was that it put it into the old parish centres, the old pre-Reformation parish centres, which were the original, say, Christian churches of the 8th and 9th centuries. And on these were taken over by the Anglican Church. And I think he's very clear throughout his kind of writings that there was a colonial enterprise in Ireland, that there was an attempt to kind of, and it was a very successful attempt, to take over the land and take over all the resources of the countryside. And it's this really conflict that worked out through the centuries, which he, in a sense, he says, made the Irish landscape. And I think it's the working out of this kind of situation which he sees so clearly in the landscape. Now, when the Catholic Church was, as it were, revived in the 18th century and particularly in the 19th century with Catholic emancipation.
Yes.
Now, he rarely mentions political events in his writings. I don't think Catholic emancipation is never mentioned, like the repeal of the Union is not really referred to.
From which you deduce what?
Well, I think he's looking at the long term. I think John Hughes had a very fundamentalist view in a sense that in many respects...
Some of these Parnells come and go, kind of.
Yeah, well, in many respects, I think what he's saying is that maybe limestone is more important than Charles Stuart Parnell. In some respects, it's the quality of the land.
Can I just say, William Smith, what struck me, those of us who grew up in the 20th century in the Catholic parish, in fact, grew up in a very modern Ireland. I mean, it's interesting to see him say that early 19th century Irish Catholicism, with its lack of concern for Ireland's Celtic past, gave the impression of yet another alien intruder.
That's true. Mm. I mean, we shouldn't overemphasise colonial qua colonial. The Catholic Church could be seen to be colonial and imperial in its own way.
Mm.
And I think Tom makes the point also that it was quite ruthless in where it selected its parish centres. Now, in many respects, it sought out the old parish boundaries, but it was always oftentimes an amalgamation of parishes. Where the parish church went or where the two churches went very much depended on where the populations were. And as Tom points out again, dedications sometimes simply ignored the early Christian and brought in new dedications. But I think one of the things we haven't touched on, and it does in a sense bring out another dimension, is that when Tom came to Ireland, in these essays here, he begins in the West. His own masters is in Aberdaron in West Wales. He begins in Inishbofin and the Mullet. And then he gets to the Cooley Peninsula, which is the third chapter.
Yes.
And it's almost as if Tom's Western gaze, which was founded in Wales and he wished to transfer to Ireland, suddenly he realises. And again, he's going against a trend. He's going against the Eston Evans view of Ireland. And I must say, I greatly admire Evans's work, but he looks at Ireland very differently. He's two Welshmen looking at Ireland very differently and both creatively. Tom pulls his gaze back to Eastern Ireland. If you had to really catch him and put him to a wall and say which part of Ireland he preferred, I'm pretty certain he'd say East Leinster, South Leinster, where he spent so
much
fieldwork.
Well, that seems to tie in a lot with his saying that people have always assumed that the most traditional parts were in the west and northwest. I mean, that's been
correct.
The general assumption. So he would say no.
He's arguing against that.
Yeah.
He's saying the greatest continuities are generally in the wealthiest areas. And here he's talking about the people, surnames. Kilkenny is a classic mm-hmm. landscape of continuity. Yeah. Stone-built farmhouses. And he's saying the West, the Northwest, is in many respects a creation of the post-17th century.
Do you know what caught my attention, really, in this towards the end of the book, I think, William Nolan, was he saying that the typical landscape study by geographers has focused on the abandoned site,
mm-hmm.
rather than the living organism. That's a most interesting insight and observation.
Yeah, I think that was one of the kind of essential elements in historical geography, in this whole morphological kind of focus, that you were looking at ruins and abandoned sites and various things like that, rather than, as he says, I think himself, the living organism. But I suppose in respect of Jones Hughes, I think one of the things that I would see about him is that for a man who came from outside the country, that he actually appropriated Ireland. And he got to know Ireland and he got to possess Ireland in a way that very few other people, even from within the country. Because if you read the descriptions of places in the book itself, and I think maybe if I could mention one particularly, there's a description of County Meath and of South County Meath, which I think is absolutely, it's poetic in its language and various things. In midwinter, it was the loneliest of countryside as the empty fields awaited a replenishment of young stock in the spring. The emptiness was made the more apparent by the coarse nature of the enclosure network, where grazing units of 20 hectares were commonplace. These units were bounded by shallow ditches which ran alongside poorly maintained and low earthen banks, which were sometimes capped with hawthorn or ash. The hawthorn yielded a magnificent display of the Mayflower when the fields were full of livestock in the early summer. The ditches served as drainage channels in this level land of impervious and stoneless soils. The grazier's rudimentary farmstead was focused on a hay haggard and a fodder yard.
You're getting high on that, William.
Yes, an extraordinary description of a countryside.
You're getting carried away.
He so managed to understand, engage with, sympathise with. I think sympathy is one of his great qualities. With the country, with its people, with its students, with the subject of geography. That in all his work then, in teaching the students, in his voyages, I mean, his field work is phenomenal, his documentary work, his work on the maps, and his reflections in the mind, in the imagination. He had a wonderful imagination. And William and myself were discussing before we came in, Tom in the field seems to me was always observing and reflecting, stopping his car, looking at the fields and the people. He read it from the evidence in front of him.
But I suppose in terms of what he did for me and for other people like me, we came from the countryside, we came from Ireland, obviously. We thought we knew Ireland, and Tom Jones Hughes actually taught us that we didn't know Ireland. Yeah. He was very much rooted in Wales, and he kept up connections with Wales. He was on the Welsh National Broadcasting Corporation, you know, in terms of talking about Ireland. I think he never lost that love of Wales, and I think he transferred that love of Wales in many respects to Ireland, and particularly in terms of the linguistic aspects of Ireland.
He was on the one hand profoundly Welsh, Welsh speaker. He didn't speak English until he was 11, so English is an acquired language. In fact, in his early pieces in Irish geography, Mary, his wife, who was a wonderful woman and a student of literature, a very seasoned student of literature, actually helped Tom editorially on his early pieces and his wonderful style. He was drawn back to Wales, but he didn't go back there. He would not underestimate the importance of rootedness to place, of belonging to Tipperary or wherever. I think, though, he wouldn't favour a view that one should only think in those ways. And also, and I'm saying it here, that we can create new routes for ourselves. We can create new places to live. He's open in that respect.
Can I just, before we end, I want you to draw a distinction for me between his work and that of Eston Evans. You've already adverted to it. Yeah. You talk about Evans being a Darwinian, by which you mean in this context.
Well, I mean, Evans was a wonderful geographer coming into Belfast in 1928, but he came with a more environmentalist position. Tom began with society. I suspect Evans begins with the Irish landscape, the Irish physical landscape. By Darwinian, I mean he adopts a Darwinian timescale, that he goes back to the beginnings and that one can understand what happened in Ireland if one traces from the beginnings and comes forward. And
so we mean, sorry, by in contrast, Tom took shorter time spans, is that it?
Tom is regarded as a 19th century specialist. In some respects he was, in some respects he was not. He uses the 19th century documents to tremendous effect. But as John Andrews again points out, he reaches forward and backwards across using very different kinds of evidence. So the way they viewed Ireland was so different. Evans from an ecological point of view, and Jones Hughes, I would say, more from a sociological point of view, that society came first. How does society organise the landscape? How does it break down into its components? How do family farmers work the land? How do parishes work? How do nations work? How do political systems above the nation, below, work?
Before we go, can I ask you if, in any essential way, because there's some suggestion that he did, that he changed his mind about the impact of landlordism in Ireland?
Well, he did, I think, in 1986, in one of his final kind of publications. He did question, was his whole understanding of Ireland, was it enough? Was it a kind of a proper assessment of Ireland? And did his kind of focus on landlordism, in some respects, did it kind of underestimate other factors?
Yes.
And I think there he was talking perhaps of the political context.
But the other thing there, Willie, was that in 1965, he would argue he had a very strongly landlord view of Ireland. And in 1984-86, he's arguing that landlordism was much less influential, more subdued in the eastern and southern parts, where he's arguing there was greater continuity.
Yeah.
And that, in fact, its effect was greater in the great pastoral lands of the Midlands and into the West.
We've been discussing landholding, society and settlement in 19th century Ireland, A Historical Geographer's Perspective by Tom Jones-Hughes. It's published by Geography Publications. My thanks to Professors William J. Smith and William Nolan. You can listen to the programme again on our off-the-shelf website at rte.ie. And you can listen back to the programme on the new RTE player. Till next week, bye-bye.